It's not cool.
It's not good. Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Zen Talk number 13.
Are you sure it's not 12?
I don't think so.
Lucky number 13.
I think it's number 13. Welcome. Like I said, I just ran in, so I'm a little
discombobulated.
And not as organized as I'd like to be because somebody sent me a question and I can't find it. And there was something I wanted to talk about this morning, but I'm still going to talk about it. I'm just not going to talk about it as well as I thought I could. So I was listening to a podcast this morning, Jonathan Fields. We talk about his podcast a lot. It's called The Good Life Project. He had Gretchen Rubin on, and I'm not even all done with the interview because you're giving up.
Well, I'm not giving up. It's just we haven't tested it, so I know they could hear us, but I'm worried that it may not be recording.
Oh, good point. All right. He took the microphone out. So if you didn't hear us before, you can hear us now. So I was listening to Jonathan Fields, Gretchen Rubin on The Good Life Project. Just came out this morning, this podcast. And she wrote, she's written a lot of books like The Happiness Project and some other ones. But her most recent book is about the four tendencies that each of us may have, meaning each of us are, what's the word I'm looking for? We are motivated to do something for different reasons, okay? So why I found this so interesting is because she basically taps into why we're motivated to do things and how everybody is differently motivated. Is that a good sentence, differently motivated?
Yes.
And so there's four different ways that you can be motivated. Either you're an upholder, where you meet outer expectations and you meet inner expectations. That means that what other people expect of you means something to you and you fulfill, and what you believe inside is important to you, so you fulfill. Or you're an obliger, which means you meet other people's expectations, but you resist your inner expectations. This is the person who's like, I got to give to others. Somebody needs something from me, I'll drop what I'm doing and I'll help them. So they meet outer expectations, but not always inner, obliger. The next one is rebel. This is where you resist outer expectations and you resist inner expectations. James Dean and teenagers and people who are like, don't tell me how to do things. It's not just teenagers, but it's that teenage mentality where you are motivated by freedom. You're motivated by, don't tell me how to do things. Tell me that I'm free.
I don't.
My nephew, he did that when he was little. But now he's 18. He doesn't do that anymore.
Well, now that he's 18, he probably also says, I don't. Because that's
don't.
Kind of the thing, right?
Yeah, but he was cuter when he was three. And then
I'm going to tell him you said
that. Well, I did say he wasn't cute now.
I'm just saying. I'm going to tell him that you said
that. He doesn't even say I don't anymore.
Yes, he does.
Okay. The last one is a questioner. This means you resist outer expectations, but you meet your inner expectations. So again, upholder, obliger, rebel, and questioner. Now, the thing is I'm not just going to leave you there. What I'm going to post, you know, connected to this this Zen Talk is a quiz you can take to figure out which one you are. And why it's important to figure out which one you are is because then you know how you're motivated to do things. Because the reason that Todd and I'll get to you in a second. He's raising his hand. The reason why Todd and I sometimes struggle with how to market the podcast or how to convey something to all of you is because he's motivated by different things than I'm motivated by. I tend to definitely fall more in the questioner rebel. Now, that may surprise you that I'm saying rebel. I'm much more of a questioner. I'm very much into meeting inner expectations. Like, I'm much more into...
If it doesn't feel right, you're not going
to
do it.
For example, this weekend, we went to family camp. It's been planned forever. We planned it a year ahead of time. I didn't feel good on Friday. So you know what I did? I stayed home and I slept. You guys weren't really that upset.
I was distraught with disappointment.
He wasn't distraught, but my kids were kind of like, what do you mean you're not going tonight? And I'm like, I have to meet my inner expectations.
That would have been good.
But I was like, I need to sleep so I can be better for tomorrow. The obliger would be like, I have to go. I said I was going to go. I need to be there. And, you know, so I'm much more of a meeting inner, and I'm much more into questioning why something is the way it is before I just do it because someone tells me to. Now, what's interesting is the rebel thing. I market to rebels, and that may not be the best way to do it.
What do you mean you market to rebels? What does that mean?
Is that the way that I market this show and everything is I always want to tell people, you don't have to do anything. all you need to do is listen. You don't, you're not going to be stuck. There's no obligation. There's no, like, I market to people who don't want heaviness. And this is why, because some of the feedback I've gotten, even about Team Zen. So for those of you who, you know, all of you that are on Team Zen, a lot of people have emailed me. One woman just emailed me specifically saying, I'm looking for a community of parents. I'm considering Team Zen, but I don't want to do all those things. And I'm like, do all of what things?
Right.
We're not asking anyone to do anything. Like, you don't have to be on the call. You don't have to be on the Facebook page. All you have to do is receive. But she had this feeling that
if she's signing up, she's got to go all in.
Yeah.
And get on every podcast live and listen to all our other podcasts. What's going on?
That's Smokey. It's our rabbit.
Rabbit's she's making eating something. Noise.
So my point is that for just so you guys, I want to clarify for you guys that are listening and that are on the call, you don't have to do anything. I mean, this is for you, and I'm so glad you're here, and I'm glad you show up, and I love the conversation. But if, you know, because sometimes people email me, they're like, I'm so behind. You can be behind. This isn't school. You can skip over two Zen talks if you want. I mean, there's no, we don't, we're not like, are you good or are you not good? You know, like, we're not judging anybody. You are not.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead. I thought you were saying you were judging.
No, I'm not judging.
Okay, go ahead.
So it's easier for us to understand this because Kathy has a little chart here, and if you're listening, it doesn't make any sense, but there's four circles. All of them kind of overlap a little bit. So the first one you said was upholder, which means the inside and the outside.
Uh-huh.
So is that your goal, is to be an upholder?
It doesn't have to be.
I think the goal should be to be the upholder, where you meet outer expectations and inner expectations. Well, so outer expectations is what people think of me. Inner expectations are what I think of myself. And you want those two things to be in alignment. So I think everybody needs to be an upholder. By the way, I am an obliger.
I know. I knew that about you.
Did you know that?
I did. Now, here's the thing. What I understand what you're saying, but this is about how we're motivated, not about how we relate to other people in the world.
I will put, and this is going to come out sounding terrible, but I will not disappoint somebody on a camp out at the expense of me not taking care of myself.
Right, and that's not better than the way I do it.
Right.
But yours isn't worse either.
Right.
So here's the thing. This is not about everyone trying to be an upholder. That's not what we're saying. Who are you? And then you'll know how you're marketed to. One of the examples that Gretchen Rubin gives is right now the marketing campaign for not smoking is directed to teenagers. And you know what they say? In the marketing campaign, they're like, you think you're free. You think that, you know, you're just free as a bird. But really, you are, nicotine has a hold of you. The people who are marketing cigarettes are marketing to you. They're stealing your money. They're taking from you. You are controlled by the tobacco industry. That will get a rebel's into their head.
Don't tell me what I am.
Exactly. Don't control me. And then there is people like when it says, there's a sign that says, thank you for picking up your garbage and for picking up your mess. You know, thank you to an obliger. That would work for you.
Yeah. For, I like being told how good I am.
For a rebel or even for a questioner may be like, why do I need to pick up this mess here?
If I were going to try to simplify these four circles, I've never heard about these four circles. Before 5 minutes ago. But the upholder is when other people expect, my activities, my behavior meets other people's expectations, and it also meets my own expectations myself.
Uh-huh.
The obliger is when my behavior meets other people's expectations, but it's at the expense of my own.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to move over to the questioner. The questioner is when I'm taking care of myself, and I don't care what other people think.
No, see, here's the thing. What you're saying is that it's one or the other. It's how we're motivated. You know I care how other people think, but what comes first? What motivates me to make a choice?
In an effort to simplify and strip through it all, let's just be black and white for a second. Like, it is what motivates you is for you to take care of yourself so
Correct.
You can take care of other people.
Correct.
I will put myself second at my own expense.
Correct.
And that doesn't help either. And then the rebel is when, I don't know, I feel like the rebel is when you don't care about yourself or anybody else.
But see, here's the thing, is even the way, and again, I know you're just trying to help them, but you're like, and that doesn't work either. Mm-hmm. Both of these work fine. These aren't like who are you good or bad. These are what motivates you to do things. And if you understand what motivates you, then you can, it's obviously a self-awareness thing, but it's also you realize how you will, like if you are an obliger and you can't get yourself to go work out in the morning, even though you know it's good for you, you need a teammate. You need someone that's depending on you in the gym to show up.
Got it.
You need a personal trainer because you will not leave that personal trainer hanging and you will show up. Because you're more, that's what motivates you. It's not about you, it's not about getting to become an upholder.
It's about understanding what makes you kick.
Exactly.
All right, okay? Well, I'm an obliger.
Right, and I'm a questioner. And
do you know any upholders?
I'm sure there are.
Do you know any rebels?
Yeah, and I have a little, like I said, I tend to market to rebels. I don't know why. I'm always trying to make people feel free. Be free! And I guess maybe that's a little bit of questioner.
Yeah.
But anyway. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send you the link so you can take the test. You may already know what you are, or maybe you're like, I don't know what you're talking about yet, but I'll send you this information.
How long is the test?
Oh, nothing. It's nothing.
A few minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I also listen to that podcast with Jonathan Fields and Gretchen Rubin.
So we'll put that in the notes.
We'll put that in the show notes because, again, this is just – I'm going to turn off my email. Hold on. This is just an easier way to understand what makes you tick and what motivates you. But again, this discussion Todd and I have had is valuable because you're not trying to aim to be something different. It's kind of like finding out your love language is physical touch and being like, oh, I got to work toward being acts of service. No, you don't. It's just who you are.
It's your hardwiring.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean because I'm a questioner, I don't care about other people. It's just what motivates me. And it doesn't mean because you're an obliger that you don't take care of yourself. Mm. It's just not as motivating as someone else.
Yeah.
And that connects to acts of service, by the way.
True. There you go.
Yeah.
You could probably put love languages in here. True. And correct. Overlap somewhere.
I thought this was really powerful. Okay. So questions.
So we have a few written questions. But I also want to give the opportunity for Anna or Peggy Bear or Kelly, or we can't see the names. There's three other people that are on the line with us right now. Mm-hmm. One is from an 843 area code. One is from a 401 area code. And one is from a 978 area code. And if those people want to ask a question, all you have to do is type in your chat window if you know how to get there and or raise your hand or do something. So. We invite each of you to, if you have something that you're currently challenged by or working on, we are here to help. Okay. So while you guys think about that, I am going to read a question from one of our teammates.
And I was going to say, both of these people did not want their name used.
Well, good, because I don't even know who wrote it. So that's perfect.
All right.
My middle kid, 6 years old, is so consumed with wanting stuff. When he gets what he wants, he likes it briefly, then goes on to desperately wanting something else. It's not a good cycle, and I need some advice on how to handle it. He doesn't have an excess amount of toys at all, but is just so stuff-focused.
Mm-hmm.
So a six-year-old kid likes things.
Right. Well, and I think I actually responded to this on the Facebook page, too. Because it's very similar for those of you who listened to last week's or to the Zen Talk number 12, Millie had a question that was very similar about going shopping with your kids or going somewhere and kids have an expectation of that. I need to get something or why can't I get something or will you buy that for me? And first of all, I already answered this before, but I'll just add a little bit to it. A lot of times we'll be like, what's wrong with my kid? You're so selfish, kid. I can't believe you would ask for that, kid. And I think that whole technique doesn't work because that's a shame technique. That's a, you shouldn't want that. And they do. So the acceptance of a kid is at a store and they want a toy, shocking. Todd likes toys at stores.
Yeah.
And he's 45.
It's my favorite aisle in the store.
He and always buys these big balls,
super balls, silly balls, bunch of just as long as there's something around that you could play with, you're okay.
And then he bounces it all through the store
and the house
while we're shopping. And then sometimes you don't buy it.
Yeah, I'll put it back.
But he does buy it sometimes, and then it's in my house,
which is fun because it's fun to have things to play with.
But there's no place to put the big super
right
balls.
Right by the TV.
No, I don't want them
right
here.
Over there.
Put I think right we by should just chair. Have one.
No,
and he'll get.
You need them accessible.
He'll get Super Balls that like have a, like Star Wars on it or yeah. like, you know.
Or sometimes you bounce them and they light up, so you can play with them at night.
Yes, which is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my point is that it's very normal to be attracted to things that are interesting to you. So we can relate to our kids on that level and say something simple like, oh, I understand why you'd want that. Yeah, that's something you like. Oh, yeah, it has Star Wars on it. Yeah, I get it. And then at the same time, I think your advice last time was before you go in, let them know.
Have an agreement before you walk in. Because that was one of the teammates, Zen teammates. It was about the grocery store and how they always want chocolate or candy bars or whatever. And you say, we're going in to the store to pick up these things. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And that doesn't mean it's going to stop them from wanting something. But have an agreement before you walk into the store.
And even, and Todd's a little more like funny, like, and that's it. I'm more like, here's the deal, guys. We're going to the store. We're getting this, this, and this, and that's all we're getting today. And it's a very, like, clean cut. There's no room for negotiation, but it's said kindly. It's just I'm setting expectation.
Mm-hmm. Disney World.
What's that?
We all know it.
That's your computer.
Hold on, guys. Hold on. Okay, something was playing. That's okay if you go into that situation, they still ask for something, because they might. You can actually go back and say, remember what I said when we came in? We're actually only getting these things. I understand why you want that, but we're only getting this. I think where we get lost, if to like to circle around, is where we get so angry about the ask that we're frustrated with them instead of just accepting the ask and saying no.
Well, this kid's six.
Right. It's so normal.
If he or she was 16, I'd be like, all right, maybe you take a different angle. But it's hard for a six-year-old to not want everything that is available to them every minute of every day.
They don't understand how money works. They don't understand that you work two jobs. They don't get that. They don't understand that you have a mortgage to pay.
Nor do they really care.
They don't. And so sometimes when we try and sit them down and give them the big money talk, they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And we act as if it should mean something. That's an adult lens. So really what we're doing is we're setting a limit and an expectation before we go into a store. We're not getting angry about the ask. And don't make an assumption that because your kid asks for things that they're greedy or selfish. They're just kids. And I think that that's where we get all worried, don't you?
I would approach it from an idea of curiosity and non-judgment. Like, I don't know how good or bad this mom is at dealing with the situation, but if she gets frustrated the second kid asks for something, you need to check yourself. Where are you in that moment? Because the kid is doing something most kids do.
Right.
So don't be surprised. And if you find yourself triggered, you need to maybe give yourself a little more self-care or self-compassion so you can deal with, you know, nagging little six-year-olds, which we've all done as parents.
And questioning what your belief is about it. Because again, you know, I'll take this to anything. Like there was a question that someone asked. I can't even remember what it was, so I'm not going to use a name. But somebody said something to the effect of, I can't believe, you know, my kid wasn't really nice to this kid. I can't believe my kid has no empathy. And I was like, just because they weren't nice to someone doesn't mean that they don't have empathy. And they may, in that moment, something else may be more shiny to them, but they do have empathy. And the whole practice of being a kid is developing. They already have it, but to help them understand that that's the good road to take. It doesn't mean that they're always going to take that road. They may be sidetracked and they'll be unkind to someone initially. But then so I think I bring that up because it's the same thing with wanting to buy something. I think we have something in our head. You know, it's like if our kid hits and we're like, oh my gosh, my kid's violent. Okay, hold on. Your kid hit because they're trying to communicate something or trying to get something. And yeah, you don't want them to continue hitting. But you don't need to jump from A to Z. And I think that's what we end up doing when our kid wants things in the store is we assume we're raising a really selfish child.
Right.
And how about we're just raising a child who's learning limits? You know, like it's almost like we need to create a new recording in our head. You know how we have that inner dialogue of this means this. And, you know, there's sometimes the girls, my children will say something that if someone else was around, they may be like, oh my gosh, what a horrible thing for them to say. But because I know my kids, sometimes they don't know, you know, they're like, and I tell them, you know, I explain through my reaction, you know, that wasn't very kind for this reason, or what makes you think that that's an okay thing to say? And we can have a conversation about it, but I don't need to go after them and like
How many times have I told Skylar to put her waffles away?
I'm playing with waffle on the table. Why is there waffle on the table?
Let me see.
Don't eat it. Don't eat it.
You have to gently remind them over and over and over again. There's still things that I do that I know I shouldn't do, and it takes constant work.
Socks, floor.
No, that's where they go.
No.
They yeah. Don't. They don't I throw there. Them at the laundry basket.
And you miss.
More often, I put them in. Why don't you instead express gratitude for when I put them in the basket?
Okay, thank you for the one sock in there.
Well, I shoot over 50%.
Yes, yes.
So you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Right, right.
It's your fault, right. Not mine.
Right.
As long as it's not my fault, it's okay.
It's all good. So, you know, that's the thing is we just have to have a more open mind, because let me take this down to the basics and then we'll move on. You're either looking at the world through a lens of love or fear, right? You guys remember our shows from like 6 years ago? You're either looking at the world through, you know, as a fear-based place or as a place of love. And neither one of those make anything different necessarily. There's still stuff happening. Like, for example, I'm a little frustrated about what's happening in the world right now. Anybody else?
There's nothing going on. It's all good news.
Oh my gosh. There's things that are driving me crazy. But my viewpoint when I get quiet is looking at it through love. People are going to help. People are going to speak up. People are going to do things that make this easier. I believe in people. I believe in love. And that helps me give more love. Fear is, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Oh my gosh, I can't, I'm overwhelmed. And I feel that way sometimes. I can't deny it. But that, I know I'm in a fear-based way of thinking. So why I'm bringing that into a kid going to the grocery store is that when you're with your child, are you afraid of what they might become? Or are you in a loving place with trusting that they're becoming exactly who they're supposed to be and you're the support system?
That's the name of that tune. We're going to move over to Anna.
All right.
She has a question. I'm unmuting her. Anna, what do you got for us?
Hi.
Hi, Anna.
First, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing is I'm one of those people that paid for the Friday, and I haven't paid yet for the whole conference because I'm just trying to figure out if my husband's going. So just FYI. Oh, I'm coming from Rhode Island. I'm definitely coming.
I was just
because I've been on the back.
I was just in Rhode Island. Where were we? I don't know.
Let me just say this for those of you who wonder. Anna, she's commenting on the show this morning because my pre-conference workshop is close to being full, but a lot of the people who registered for it didn't register for the full conference. So I was just making sure that these people who are coming are eventually going to buy a ticket for the conference.
Kathy was so mad.
No, I wasn't.
She was screaming and yelling and swearing.
No, it's not. I'm making that up. I trust you and don't worry about it. You're all good.
We got your back.
We're just trying to, because my husband's, he doesn't want to go. Yeah. I'd say he's like, oh, I can't wait. But I was like, I want you to come to this. And he's like, yeah, we can do that. You know, it's more of that.
Right. I understand.
So
it's all good.
So I was just trying to figure that out.
Okay.
And I guess the other question would be, I guess related to that. So when he gets stressed out, he kind of takes it out on me. So it's like, I'm the problem with the little, silly things. Like, oh, duh, that went very wrong because of you. And I'm like, okay, you have to, what's really bothering you? So he's been actually voicing that, twice now. He's like, oh, what's really bothering me is, this, and that, which is amazing because he never did that before. But at the same time, sometimes he'll be like, oh, all the work you do on yourself, it's not even working. And I'm like, that is so hurtful. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to figure out how to approach that to be that's really mean. It's not like I'm going to be I don't know, whatever, overnight, enlightened or something. I don't know what he's expecting. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's my question.
Wow, that's a humdinger.
I understand.
I'm gonna mute you because we'll probably come back to Anna, but I'm gonna let Sweetie start.
Well, one thing, this is about the husband, yes.
Yes.
Is that because at first when you were saying it, I was thinking it was about your kid. But the thing that I would say is that is an example of an Achilles kind of conversation. And what that means is sometimes when we're angry at our partner, because sometimes they're the safest person to be angry at because we know they're going to love us. And we sometimes are angry and we want to win or we want to make our point. So we say something so significantly hurtful. And Todd and I refer to that as like the Achilles heel of each other, which is if Todd said that to me, what he said to you, he knows that would hurt me tremendously. Because the, and he may in that moment feel justified, like, because it's a slap down. It's kind of like, you think you're so great, but nothing's working anyway. And he would feel justified in that. But I don't know how long it would take. A little bit later, you probably wouldn't feel too good about that because you would know that's a below the belt kind of comment.
Yes, right? Yes. And the reason I would know that it's below the belt is because of conversations that you have had, you and I have had before that conversation took place. Mm-hmm. Real quick, I'm going to unmute Anna for a second. Anna, does your husband know that this language is really harmful? I assume he does, but I just want to confirm.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and we do talk about it. And I do go back and look. It was really mean. So mean.
With, oh, we like, lost you for a second.
We lost you for a second. So I'm gonna ask you to repeat what you just said as best you can.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess he does. And I just want to get to a point where it doesn't happen.
Right. 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 Okay.
So I have something real quick.
Okay.
This is the paradox again, because when I heard you asking your question, I wrote down a few things. There's been moments in our marriage where we've just been disconnected emotionally, whatever. And Kathy has been strong enough to, you know, we've shared this example on the podcast before, but you know, let's say there's a week that went by where I really wasn't contributing much to the household other than my 9-to-5 job. And I was kind of, even though I was at home, I wasn't really helpful. I wasn't available emotionally. I wasn't listening. I was had my headphones in and all that. So what Kathy could have done is take your headphones out. You're not here and gotten really mad. But instead she would say things like, oh, thanks for taking out the trash. She would see those few things that I was contributing, although there were few, but she would say them to me. And that kind of allowed me to let my guard down, because if she would have just kind of came at me, you know, one person wants to pick a fight, the other person all of a sudden digs their heels and wants to pick a fight. So my invitation to you, Anna, is to, is to see if you can, find the good of some of the things that your husband's doing and tell him that. But at the same time, and this is the paradox, you need to stand up for yourself. But you need to stand up for yourself in a loving way. And that's the trick. And I wonder if you have any advice or tips of how Anna can stand up for herself without going, you know, trying to like hit below the belt.
Yeah. My suggestion is when things are good, and maybe they're good today, like you guys aren't in an argument today, to say, I want to just tell you something, like it'll take 5 minutes, and then say, sometimes when we're in an argument and we're not in our best minds, you say something to me about the self-care that I'm doing and that it's not working, and say, I want you to understand that that is hurtful emotionally, but it's also feels kind of damaging to my spirit and it's damaging to our relationship. Because I'm feeling like you are recognizing that I'm trying to do something for myself and then you're using it against me. And that makes our connection, that challenges our connection. I don't feel connected to you when you say that kind of thing. Now, the reason why it's important to say this to him when you're in a good space is because to Todd's point, he's going to have his defenses low. And you're not going to him saying, you better apologize to me. This is not a game of now I win. What it is it's a way of saying, I know we're going to argue because we live together and we love each other and we're going to argue.
That's what marriage is. That's a part of marriage.
It is.
Disagreement.
Disagreement. Argue. It doesn't even have to be a fight. It's just disagreements. But can we make an agreement to not hit there? Because I know it may feel like you're getting me, but really what you're doing is you're dividing us. And can that be my thing that we don't touch? And there may be other things, Anna, along the way that you're like, ooh, that's not, let's not touch that either. And you have to give him the space to say, then you can't go here.
So Kathy has talked about Achilles. And one thing that we talk about a lot is don't attack your partner's Achilles. So for example, like I know one of Kathy's is, if she's trying to tell me something important and I'm kind of half listening, looking at my phone, I know that's not going to go.
Or he walks around with his earphones on all the time. Well, or not all the time.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
Not all the time. Oh. Sorry. He tends to walk around with his earphones on occasionally. And it's very like isolating. Like if I'm like, Todd, blah, 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 blah. He can't hear me. And he walks right by me. And it's like, he's in this different zone. And if I'm kind of just doing my work or whatever, it's fine. But if I'm, if it's like, you know, like I'd like to be able to have a conversation, it's a struggle.
So I know that that's not going to work. Now, one thing that Kathy knows about me, because we've explained, we've talked about this, when we're kind of in a disagreement, one thing that she used to do a lot more frequently that she barely ever does anymore, which is give me the silent treatment. It triggers something inside of me when I was a little boy, and it just kind of makes me go a little crazy. So she knows that although she kind of wants to just give me the silent treatment to take care of herself, she knows that the ramifications of the silent treatment for me are not good. So the step one is figure out what your Achilles heel is. I'm guessing, Anna, for him to, I mean, I'm going to call it out. That is a tough thing to hear.
Yeah.
So I feel for you. And the other thing is when you have the conversation, to Kathy's point, have it when you're in a good place,
yeah,
if you can, going out on a date or whatever. He needs to know that this is truly a below the belt thing, because that'll sting.
And the last thing about this, because this is the piece, is the reason that triggers you, Anna, is because there's part of you that believes he's right. And this is, and the reason I'm right there with you. I'm not pointing this out without having that myself. If Todd were to say that to me, it would really trigger me, because there'd be part of me that would think, oh my gosh, nothing's working. I'm not worthwhile. All this self-care I'm doing is not working. There's a self-worth thing in there, and we all have it. This is men or women. So he's triggering something in you that makes you believe he's right. Because again, we always use examples that if he were to say something to you like, you know, Anna, listen, your hair is blonde and it's blonde and you know it's blonde. You'd be like, what are you talking about? My hair's not blonde. You don't believe it. It's nothing that you would get upset about. You're like, it's dumb. But when he says to you, the self-care you're doing isn't working, the reason you have such a response to it is because there's a piece of you that's like, what if it's not working? And so that's like a self-compassion piece for you is, Anna, if you're doing self-care things, it doesn't mean you're not going to be impatient, and it doesn't mean you're never going to get angry again. And it doesn't mean that you're going to be a perfect parent or a perfect spouse. It's just a practice. So when he says that to you, hopefully he never does again. But if he did, there's got to be a part of you that says, yes, sometimes I don't do things perfectly, but the self-care practice is never not working. It's contributing to my overall well-being.
So a few other things. One is, I'm going to unmute you for a second, Anna. How do you guys have a scheduled date night, whether it be once a week or once a month, or is it every now and again, or what happens there?
Unmute. Oh. We have grandparents that take our daughter a lot, so.
I accidentally unmuted you, so I didn't hear the first part of what you just said. Sorry.
Oh, I said it's not scheduled, but it's often. Probably like once a week.
Okay.
Oh, good. That's great.
That's good. And the other thing I wanted to say, and I'm going to mute you again, is look at this as an opportunity, mm-hmm, as this is going to be a vehicle for you guys to deepen your relationship. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, I don't know how old you are. You're in your 20s or 30s or 40s. Obviously, you're not any older than that. And I, as much as I thought I knew Kathy when I married her, I didn't really, because we knew each other like 7 or 8 years before that. And I thought for sure I knew this woman, and I know her so much better now than I did when we were 29 and 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to know her so much better 15 years from now, as like, I think I know her now, but I really, you just continue to understand each other. So your partner is a vehicle for your own self-discovery, for your own personal growth, for your own trigger points. And I know that that's kind of hard advice to hear, but it truly is. This is an opportunity for you guys to grow deeper, because if you just kind of like
brush it under the rug, yeah,
under the rug, or let it go down your back or whatever, that's not healthy. So you need to treat this with the respect that it deserves, and it really will kind of get you guys to a better place instead of look at it as a symptom of what's wrong.
Right. This is kind of what we were talking about before with the fear and the love, is sometimes we'll, like, our partner will say something to us that hurts us, and we'll be like, this means that we have all these issues, and this means we're never going to work out, and this means he's never going to get me. Not necessarily. It could be he doesn't know how much that hurts you, and that gives you an opportunity to speak up. And that may be something that's harder for you. Maybe you're more of an obliger, or maybe it, we don't even need to label it. It's just harder to say, no, I'm important. And again, this gives you the opportunity. I think that partnership, it's one thing to work on ourselves autonomously, to do self-care. But it's another thing to do self-care within a relationship, meaning that relationships can point out and help us rise to our true selves just as well. I believe in individual self-care, and I believe in relational self-care. And it's not just about marriage. It's about the relationship with our kids and our friends. And all these relationships show up to keep helping us practice speaking up, being our best selves, respecting another person. You know, we always say on the show that you think you got something. You're like, okay, I finally figured this out with my friend or my kid or my mom. And then it shows up in different pants. It shows up differently.
Well, and it's also important to say that there's about 50 people that are on Team Zen, and it's fair to say that not just Anna can use this advice.
Right.
We can use it with each other, and so we're not just speaking to Anna, no. We're speaking to anybody who's listening. This is, you know, we all get frustrated with our partner. How do we utilize that and make it as an opportunity for growth? So I just want to say that out loud. We're not speaking to Anna, we're speaking to ourselves and everybody else. And then the other thing is, I don't know if this will help. This has been about 5 years since we did this podcast, but we do have a podcast called Quit Pushing Self-Help on Your Partner. I know that's not exactly what it is we're talking about, but it might not be a bad reminder just of, like, you know, taking care of yourself. And because Mike, you know, she's trying to convince her husband to come to the conference.
Right.
And he may not want to come to the conference. Right. He may not be in his best interest.
Okay for her to ask,
yes,
and to say, this is important to me, and I know you don't want to go, but I would love to have you with me. So both are true. Hmm. The paradox of life.
Yeah.
He may decide he's not going to go. Doesn't mean he doesn't love you. But for you to be able to say, this is what I need, this is what I would, or this is what I would like, that's okay too.
I'm going to unmute you just to see if you have any lingering thoughts about anything we just said, Anna.
Can you put that in the show notes? Because I didn't listen to that one. And I would like to, because sometimes I feel like I am, and he's like,
right.
Well, yeah, like, oh, I read this and I just saw this. And he's like, oh, yeah.
So Todd, Anna, I have one more thing to say to you then. So now I understand even more why he's using that against you. Because what he's trying to, if he's not into self-help or this show or whatever, and you ask him to like these things, or you're like, I want you to appreciate these things I'm doing, or did you hear this, or what about this? He feels defensive about it. And so then he uses that as a weapon against you, that, well, you listen to the show, but you're no different. So I don't need the show.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why he's using it as a weapon. So what you can say to him before this conversation that you have is say, I know sometimes I ask you to listen to things or read things, and I know I get really excited about them. And I don't want you to think that I'm trying to be judgmental of you or say that you need these things. I just want to share a part of my heart with you. And
whether or not you subscribe, husband, to any of it really shouldn't matter.
Right. It's about that I just want to share. Then he won't use it as a weapon against you.
Kathy invited me to read A New Earth. Whatever. It's a book by Eckhart Tolle, and I didn't because I didn't like the beginning of the book. 4 years later, Oprah had Eckhart Tolle on, and the book changed my life. If Kathy would have kept at me to read that book, it would have been for the wrong reasons, and I would not have had the experience I did. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready. I didn't want to read that book. I wasn't ready for a deep dive into self-help. Your husband may never be, or he might be ready to change tomorrow. You don't have control whether or not your husband is going to shift into the self-help area or not. The only thing you have control over is yourself and your own emotions. And at the same time, and there's the paradox, you have to take care of yourself and stand up with love to say, this is an important part of who I am.
And it, but it doesn't mean that you have to decrease your love for it. See, that's the thing is sometimes I have a lot of people who come to my workshops, and there'll always be women who stay after and say, my husband and I are not on the same page about parenting, about our relationship, about what we say to each other. And I just don't know. I just feel like we're moving in his direction, or we're never going to be able to talk about what I'm interested in. And here's the thing. They can both live side by side. You don't have to stop doing what you're doing, Anna. You get to love what you love and read what you read and be who you are. And you can share with him from your heart, and he gets to be who he is. But the more that you own what's yours and enjoy it and love it, the more he might be interested, because he'll feel space in there. Like, oh, she doesn't need me to be this. She's just kind of interested. But if you need him to do it, he's going to.
Well, and you've done a good job of finding your own community. You listen to the podcast, so in a way that we're in your ears, you know, once a week, you found this Team Zen.
Yeah.
There's probably other women in your community that are big into self-help. Go find them and surround yourself with these people instead of, you know, forcing it upon your partner.
But it doesn't, and those relationships don't have to threaten your relationship with your partner. Right. That's what I'm trying to say, is that there are relationships I have that are different than, you know, Todd has, you know, we don't have to be on board with everything our partner does. We are two trees growing side by side. We are not trees that need to be intertwined in everything we do. We are two trees growing side by side. I am me, Todd is him. We are not one. We are not one.
Nor do we want to be
one. I don't want to be one. I just want to be me. And I want to be married to Todd. So you grow together, and then you use each other's shade to help keep you safe. But you got to let each other be who they are. Mm-hmm. And it sounds all poetic and it's easier said than done, but it really, that image is always helpful whenever I'm like, well, Todd should do this, or maybe I need to be more like him. It's like, no, two trees.
Well, and I honestly feel like when you told Anna about if her husband accused her of having blonde hair, which she obviously does not have, like, that's really your deep dive work. Like, what is it about when he says that triggers you? And that is, I don't even know how to help her with that, but that's the essence of it.
Well, we all have it.
We all have it.
Whatever, you know, take this off of Anna for a second. Whenever anyone says something to us and it triggers us and it makes us so angry and so upset, then we know that's an issue that we need to look at. And it doesn't mean we need to look at it and solve it, but like, why are there words? Because I can have the same person say four things to me. Three of them I perceive as compliments, and one I somehow perceive as a slight, and all I can think about is that one thing. And I'm like, that really bothers me. I can't believe it. And Todd will be like, but they said this nice thing and this nice thing. I'm like, yes, but they said that one thing. And that's a trigger for me, whatever it may be. So again, that's just not Anna. That's all of us.
Last unmute. Anna, any other thoughts?
Okay, thank you.
We lost you.
I think she said she's all right.
Are you good?
Yes, I said I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Anna. I appreciate the question.
It was a good one. Really deep.
It's a humdinger.
Yeah. Well, a good humdinger.
Yes.
Okay, do we have time for another question?
If somebody has one, we're here. But if not, we'll sign off. We don't have to go, you know, 60 minutes, 40.
Does anybody have something they want to type or anything that they want to say? All right. Yeah, I say just because I have to have a drink of water, I have to be done.
All right.
I walked in the door and I just went to the next thing. And I want to be able to give you guys my good self. I feel like that was a good, you know, I feel like my good self was here, but.
Well, and this is not about Anna. Like that, what we just said is something that we could talk about whenever we're in a group
of
husbands or wives.
Yes. Or partners or friends. Or children.
Yeah.
Because
it's universal.
That's okay. Here I go on another tangent. But that's the thing, is that sometimes our kids offend us. And then that's always interesting to me too, is like, why are we offended by our kids? And a lot of times it's because they'll say something like, you never do anything fun. And they say that. And then that makes us go, how dare they say that? I can't believe they would say that. And the kid doesn't know how that affects us, because there's some tape in our head that maybe we learned as a kid that we're not fun, or we don't know how to socialize. And so we make that, we think they're like, you know, digging a knife in, when really they don't even know You know, kids say things like that. And we can let them know it hurt our feelings. We don't have to pretend it didn't. Mm-hmm. But we just, you know, I don't always believe this, but Todd's sister has been in recovery for, what, 14 years?
Give or take. I don't
know. And she always says that one of the big parts of AA is if you spot it, you got it. And so if there's something that really bothers you or a person that really bothers you, there's something about that person that either you need to learn more about or that they remind you of something about yourself. And again, I think there's examples that don't work for sure. That. I think it's too extreme.
Yeah.
But
it's
again,
a good rule of thumb.
It's a good rule of thumb. So, all right.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Thank you for getting on. And as always, feedback, just let us know. And we want to continue to improve and grow and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so. We love you. And we will, you know, I'll send this out later today. And you let us know if you need anything, okay?
Keep trucking.
Bye, everybody.